Thank you. It's my pleasure to talk on a subject today that is so near and dear to my heart, and it makes it even more so to do so in front of an audience of people who are as passionate, I hope, about intellectual property as I am. I also want to thank Director General Gurry for the opportunity to address you all on the topic on behalf of industry so that the industry has an opportunity to express our views, but also to commend he and his team for putting together this forum and the opportunity to look in a little more deeply into some of these issues and start to explore potential solutions to the problem I think we're all fairly well aware of. Climate change is an issue that GE as a company has been following for a very long time. For those of you not too familiar with GE, we're a pretty sizable conglomerate, and we have a lot, I would say, at stake or a lot invested in the climate change technologies because we have many products and services that are directly impacted or that have a direct impact on the climate change question. We've got businesses that do aircraft engines and hybrid locomotives for trains. We have a business that's solely devoted to almost every form of energy you can imagine, from wind and solar and nuclear to coal gasification, and we're working on carbon capture and sequestration. So, you know, as a company, we are, I'd like to say, all in on this particular issue. So it is one that we care very deeply about, so much so that in the year 2004, our chairman and his, you know, senior team had the foresight to launch what they called the Eco-Imagination campaign. And they decided that this was a big enough issue that a company the size of GE ought to put its might and its resources forward in attempting to solve this particular problem. So they committed to four particular themes as part of this Eco-Imagination. One of those, and most important from my perspective, is that they committed to double the amount of research and development they were doing in the area of green technology from about $750 million in 2004 to $1.5 billion by 2010, just next year. And I'm proud to report that we're well on our way of doing that. This issue is so important to us, frankly, as a company, that we've reached out and joined two coalitions who are looking solely at this particular issue, and that is the interplay of intellectual property into the climate change and how those two should come together. And those two coalitions are, first, the ACTI coalition. We call it the Alliance for Clean Technology Innovation. We're really focused on the innovation side of it. And the second coalition is together with not just companies, but also the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. In fact, they just had a press release to kind of launch the European version of this called the Coalition for Innovation, Employment, and Development, CIED. And so both of those coalition, industry coalitions, are also looking very deeply into this issue and have been doing so for about a year. So hopefully I'll try and express the views not only of General Electric Company, but some other members of coalitions who are like-minded as we are. You know, as I look into this issue, I'm going to try and address it in threefold. First, the problem. Secondly, what's the role of IP, as Director General Gurry talked about? What's the role of IP in pursuing a solution? And then third, more specifically, what's the role of WIPO in going after this particular issue? I'll spend almost no time on framing the problem statement because I think a number of speakers have done a very eloquent job on explaining just exactly how deep the problem is. It's not just CO2 emissions and global warming. There's a whole series of additional problems that follow on from this particular problem. So with no further ado, let's start talking about the role of intellectual property as it pertains to climate change. From my perspective, there are two key roles that intellectual property plays in climate change mitigation. The first, as you can see on the slide here, is solely focused on innovation. There's no doubt that the single best way to get our hands around this problem is to innovate our way out of it. We've proven time and time again, and the intellectual property system has been the motivating force to show how when industry gets their mind wrapped around a particular issue and there's sufficient incentive to go after a solution to a problem, they're able to do so. And you know, part of what's so unique, I think, about intellectual property is compared to many of the discussions that take place in the UN context. I think the UN is almost always looking at fighting over a scarce, fixed set of resources. And it's all about allocating that fixed set of resources. But we have the great fortune of talking about an asset which is inexhaustible, and that's human ingenuity. There is no boundary to be placed on human ingenuity, so we don't have to allocate it up. This is something we want to unleash so that we can go after and solve some of the big problems that are facing us today. So how do we do that? Well, I guess I'd ask the prerequisite question is, do we have enough clean technology today? Well, we have a lot. There's no question we've got a lot of really great technology out there, but I think the more important question is it enough to solve the problem in the long term? And I think clearly the answer to that question is no, we need more. And I think the more pertinent question, though, is do we have enough technology available today to solve this problem affordably? And absolutely the answer to that question is not even close. Because you can see the question, the debate is really about who's going to pay for climate change mitigation. So anything and everything we can do to bring down the price point of a solution such that the governments that are at the negotiating table can afford to pay for that solution is something we have to put all of our energy behind. And fortunately, we have a system that's proven to be reliable in performing exactly that function, and that's the intellectual property system. Just a couple of statistics here on this slide that show the impact or the potential impact that innovation could have on addressing this problem. As you can see, the present value of future innovation in this space, if we do it right, could be as big as $20 trillion. Now that, in my mind, takes a very unaffordable problem and makes it almost affordable. Another way I like to look at this is graphically. I much prefer looking at a picture when a picture can suffice. I won't bother to put the words on there. This shows graphically, kind of the blue line demonstrates where the baseline technologies are today, and the green represents the potential of where we might be able to bring the price point of these different types of technology if we were to throw our resources and investment towards innovating our way out of this particular problem. So, I would maintain that one of our most important and top objectives has to be to increase the amount of investment directed at clean technology, both on the mitigation and the adaptation side. But why is intellectual property so key to doing that? Governments obviously could decide to throw money at this problem, and they hopefully will do just that. The problem we face, though, is intellectual property or innovation as it's happening today is going on in the private sector. Two-thirds of all the investment in the innovation is happening in the private sector. It's not happening through the governments. So hopefully they'll step up. But if you want to motivate industry, intellectual property is the way to do that. That we know for a certainty. We had an interesting dialogue inside our company with the head of our energy business, who's responsible for the vast majority of these technologies, and we did a little discussion with him about what would happen if the intellectual property system were challenged. What would happen if compulsory licensing became the mainstream for green technology? And, you know, he made a couple of, I thought, very good points. Again, this is as a businessman. I think he has a finance background. You know, for them, investment is solely a numbers game. There's no compassion. There's no charity involved. It's where can we get the highest return from money? And in a company the size of GE, and with the vast array of technologies and businesses that he has under his control, he said, look, if I couldn't control my destiny, if I couldn't predict the return on investment for green technology, or it was somehow compromised or uncertain, I would likely shift much of my investment dollars to places that were more certain, that were more controllable, that had a higher return on investment. For him, it's a simple numbers calculation. And that's the way it works, I think, across all of industry. So for us, we need the guarantee that intellectual property provides that we can control our destiny. If we invest in X, we can reap Y. There's no guarantee there, but at least we have some understanding of how the system works, and we have a confidence level that we've built over decades with this system that we're willing to invest into solutions that may not be resolved for 10 or 15 or 20 years out, because some of the solutions we're chasing today for climate change we won't see for another 10 or 15 years. So this is a long-term game for us and requires a lot of investment over a prolonged period of time. Secondly, as Mr. Gurry aptly pointed out, the other key role that intellectual property plays is that it is a fundamental prerequisite to the transfer of technology. I would argue, as just a business person, that if there is not adequate protection of intellectual property and reliable enforcement of those intellectual property rights, you will not have technology transfer. or what you will have will be vastly slower and less efficient than what you might otherwise see if you had robust intellectual property protection. Again, all we have to look to is our own experience in industry. Most of the technology transfer happening today from within our company and the companies that we work with in these coalitions are happening in, it takes two dynamics. One, reliable intellectual property protection, and a market driver. If we have those two dynamics, we have technology transfer. If we don't have either of those, odds are the amount of technology transfer drops off precipitously. So, not surprisingly, you would see the vast majority of our technology transfer happening in Brazil and China and India. Big markets, you know, the IP systems have come to the point now where they're reliable, and we feel that we can get redress if there were ever to be a violation of those rights. That's all it takes to get effective technology transfer. So, you know, and WIPO, being the position it is, can help us guarantee both of those key objectives. They ought to be the first and the preeminent body that helps direct policy in this particular area. And so far, I think they've done a phenomenal job of doing that. And again, this conference is indicative of the fact that they intend to do so in the green technology space. Finally, I talked just briefly about some other potential functions that I think WIPO could perform on top of those other functions. I'm a little concerned at this point at the lack of education and the lack of information that is being shared with the policymakers and decision makers around the role that intellectual property plays, whether it's for green technology or others. I think there was some misinformation that was developed as a result of the pharmaceutical debate that went on for such a long period of time and became so contentious that people naturally assume that, well, every new technology is going to look just like the pharmaceutical discussion we have. Well, the reality is this particular discussion around green technology has absolutely nothing to do with the pharma discussion. These are two very different animals. The technologies we're talking about, has been pointed out, these technologies have been around for decades, the basic technology. Now, yes, there are 200,000 patents out there, but they're all for incremental improvements over decades-old technology. Now, we hope that they're significant improvements, and they're non-trivial, but again, they were not easy to come by either. They required significant investment. But the price point for that intellectual property is nowhere near what it might be for a pharmaceutical compound, where a single patent or several patents can protect the entire market domain. There is no exclusivity today, I would say, on a wind turbine, on a nuclear power plant, on a coal gasification plant. They just don't exist. The technologies are old enough that anybody can compete in that space. Now, we may have a slightly different way of doing some particular feature than perhaps, you know, our colleagues at Siemens, but we're both making essentially a similar product and selling it on the market. So the dynamics just don't translate from the pharmaceutical sector over to the green technology space. And we have to recognize and be aware of that when we have these discussions. Secondly, I would say we have to insist upon high integrity IP policymaking. You know, we heard Mr. Feldman speak earlier this morning about this isn't about hype, this isn't about rhetoric, this is about gathering data, understanding from the facts what we should and shouldn't do, and where we don't have adequate facts, we create a forum that allow us to gather the facts, understand them, analyze them in a way sufficient that we can be confident that the policies we're going to put in place will do what we intend them to do and that they won't do any harm that we would like to avoid. So let's stick with the intellectual property system because it's proven what it's capable of, and it's great. But then let's build upon that. Let's add to that where there's areas and gaps that we've identified that may not be addressed. And one we'll look at, obviously, is the poorest and most vulnerable countries. There isn't a big market dynamic to drive things forward. Now, they will be the recipients of the innovation that takes place worldwide on green technology, but because they lack a big market presence, there's not going to be a big incentive for companies like GE and others to go invest in those countries. So we need alternate mechanisms to help incentivize the technology transfer to take place into those regions. The centers of excellence concept that will be discussed is one possible approach, but there are others. I've seen several possible approaches set forward today, and I think this is the body. WIPO is the place where those discussions ought to take place, but they ought to include the stakeholders, industry, and everybody who has relevant information, solid, reliable data that can be contributed to the decision-making process. And so, you know, as I break this all down kind of in closing, let me just ask that all of those of you who believe in the IP system as I do, try and take away four different things that I think we need to do. One, understand and defend the benefits that IP brings to solving big global challenges like climate change. It's proven, it works. Let's make sure we defend it, and if we have to, you know, be very open and verbal about the defense of that system. Second, let's help the IP system work more efficiently as a technology diffusion mechanism. There's things we can do, such as expediting the prosecution of an application or giving it special preferential treatment. There are, you know, we could use more clear terminology, more common terminology across these various sectors so that when people search for them and we're looking for the tech, for the vast amount of information that is available on these patent databases, they will find the information that they're looking for. And then let's make sure that there's robust enforcement mechanisms, because if those exist, again, as I said earlier, you will see effective technology transfer taking place. Third, let's employ rigorous IP policymaking. Let's not take the easy way out. Let's not default back to just the you know, kind of arguments we'd like to make because they suit our own particular interests. Let's look at the data and let the data drive the policy. And then finally, let's build upon the proven successes of the patent system with new solutions that might help us solve some of these difficult problems. With that, I thank you very much.